One of the ironies of this whole thing is that autism, I mean, the name itself comes from autos, which means self. And, the idea was that we're all, in their own little world. And the reality is that we're more in our own little real world.
Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld. Tonight's guest is Dr. Diane Hennessy, a neuropsychiatrist. But more than that, she has redeemed a population that was once disregarded and opened the door to the untold capacities of the human mind and its reaches into the unknown.
My son said to me, "I can hear thoughts." And I said, "Impossible." And he said to me, "You don't get the kind of gifts that I have if you lie."
The more time I have to spend with these autistic individuals, the more I realize that they are here showing us so much more than just telepathy. I mean, we're just tapping the surface of it. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I've started my own. I just recently co-founded my own institute because I really need to have the kind of structure that enables me to systematically study these children and to really to explore their gifts and to explore what they want to communicate. And to work on trying to find ways to facilitate that communication, because spelling is, it's so slow compared to how their minds work. I mean, it's like being forced to crawl when you actually could win the 4-minute mile.
Yeah,
Okay. It really is. It's really that bad in terms of the discrepancy between the sense that I have of how their brains process information and how reduced their filters are for accessing information. And so to me, we have this tremendous opportunity right now with the combination of so many of these individuals being here incarnated on the planet right now. And we have, and we also have, AI that has taken off. And what I'm interested in doing is trying to see if we can somehow use AI to assist them in their communication. But you have to be very careful about how you do that. And it's not something, because as we know, AI has its own algorithms and it'll make things up.
Right,
And
exactly.
so I really want to spend time with more time with them, and it's not just about me spending time with them. I mean, it really takes a team in order to really see everything that they are really trying to show us. Because I hear reports of psychokinesis. They see entities, they see dead people, they have precognitions. They are having, just being around them is sometimes bringing about a shift in the consciousness of the person who's around them. So it's so similar to what people describe who've worked with like a guru who really is a true master, and not one of these fake gurus who
No.
just talks the talk, but somebody who really actually has a level of consciousness that whether you want to say that it's that they're resonating at a different frequency, or whatever language you want to put to it, that there's something different that people sense, and it really needs to be explored, because the planet can really benefit from what they have to offer. I mean, so many of them are gifted at science and math, and they come from, even if it wasn't just the downloads of information that some of them, reportedly had. I mean, a lot of them come from a lineage of ancestors who were scientists and engineers and mathematicians, and who, so they really could be, a lot of them could really be like Stephen Hawking's, okay, who just have not had the technology given to them so that they can actually have a voice.
Yeah, no, I love everything you're saying because my experience of sitting with Alex and is that it's like a satsang, which means in the company of truth, the traditional meaning of that. So he's coming from a place beyond thought, beyond thinking. He's just accessing this immediate field and he has access to everything, but there's also the disruptive behaviors of those that are not integrated. So
The way that I would put it is, and this is really what my book that is being published this coming year, goes into. It really helps you to understand the neurophysiology that is behind these extraordinary states of consciousness they have, so that you can understand both the source of their gifts, but also the source of their challenges.
That makes
And and so one of the ways to think about it is to realize that in our brain stem, we have these nuclei, the locus coeruleus, the raphe nuclei, and the substantia nigra. Okay, those are like three of the, principal nuclei in the brain stem. And each of them is like a button for for our state of consciousness. Okaay, so the Raphe nuclei is a serotonergic nucleus, and so it's what sets the sleep cycle. Okay, there's this, it's what's, it that basically involved in, when we go into dreaming sleep. Okay, it's the Raphe nuclei is kind of the on button for that. Okay. Then you have the locus coeruleus, which is the fight or flight button. It's that, really kind of high adrenaline rush. Okay, which when you're in a state of high adrenaline, your orientation to space time is different. People when they're under high adrenaline, they then can have that an expansion of time. Okay, they can actually, it's like, wow, they can do in 5 seconds what would normally take a minute. It's just like somehow it's like time slows down and enables them to do whatever it is, whether it's like escaping, you're going to be hit by a car, okay, and you see it and you just do exactly what you need to do to get out of harm's way. But it's like you're not experiencing it happening in the flash. You're experiencing it like, oh, I'm turning over here, and then the other nucleus is the substantia nigra, which is the one that when it deteriorates, it leads to Parkinson's. So it is it's kind of the control button for initiating movement and stopping movement when after you've started it. Okay. And so that is really that kind of button that is involved in sort of the connection between free will and our ability to operate our body. Okay,
But you're
okay.
talking about just the mechanics of the heart.
And so here's what I want to say is that what we know about the genetics of people who have autism is that all of the neurotransmitters involved in those three nuclei that I just mentioned are heightened
I
know,
see.
people differ in terms of how much of these things, and so it's like, so that's like setting the tone for how their brain is operating. So if you combine all of those things that I just said, what do you have? You have somebody who has access to like a dreamlike world, okay, an expanded sense of time, and yet their anxiety is through the roof. And they don't have great control over their body.
Right.
Their body wants to move faster. And so they have to engage in these repetitive things to deal with the fact that their body doesn't want to sit still. Contrast that with your, Hindu mystics who got to their state of expanded consciousness through quiet meditation.
Yeah. No,
So
that.
they have access to the same knowledge,
Yeah.
but one is in a body that can just sit there and be calm, and the other is in a body that is just like a race car that just wants to go zzz. And
That's the best explanation I've heard. Of course, you've been in this field for 20 or more years, but I've heard to explain the behavior and wisdom of what these geniuses are experiencing.
Come here, Dr. Hennessy, in person in Sedona this March.
You're invited to join us for our 2026 Sedona Ascension Retreat. It's our 11th anniversary, and we're so excited to celebrate it with you. Special guests include Dr. Diane Hennessy, star of the Telepathy Tapes podcast and author of the ESP Enigma, and MindSight expert Dalia Burgoyne will be teaching techniques.
Ready?
And that is a highlighter, I think.
What color?
It's yellow.
As well as Hakeem Isler, creator of Psy Games International. I am your host, Suzanne Ross, and my co-host will be Alan Steinfeld. We invite you to join us for our 2026 Sedona Ascension Retreat.
Diane is bringing out some amazing research and ways of understanding this phenomena, these autism, in ways that are revolutionary, Diane. Really, they are. So she just went over the hardware of what happens in the brain to these autistic kids. But I want to know, sitting next to one of them, Alex and Lidu, having met her, what's going on in their heads? Like, how are they cognizing the world around them? I mean, you would know more than any. What are they seeing? What do they pick? How does like one moment, okay, we're aware here, but what's going on for them as they kind of are in reality?
I know what you're asking, and I can answer it to some extent. I mean, what I just talked about in terms of the fact that they're not experiencing time the way that we are, for example. They experience time in a very sort of, very similar to how Einstein described it. It's really not linear. And so that's one thing to think about. And another thing to realize is that most of them, if not all of them, have synesthesia. So they're not just, if they're looking at a number, they might be seeing a color with that number all the time. Okay, so colors have meaning for them beyond just how we think of colors. And colors, they see colors around people, they see colors around animals. And so there's all of this information for them that's encoded in color, which is really just frequency that they're picking up on. And they, all of their senses are heightened. You know that that they you know their sense of smell, their ability to hear things, they have higher resolution. That's why a lot of them have perfect pitch. So that's what I know about them. The problem is that having them describe their inner experience is extremely difficult for them. I mean, what you're asking is very, very challenging for somebody who's autistic. I mean, when people, when they think of the diagnosis of autism, they don't really know quite what they're talking about. They don't really understand it. And for a long time, when I first started out doing this, but over 40 years ago, or close to 40 years ago, it was just a black box. I mean, because you had these individuals who couldn't communicate, and all you saw was that they just were not engaged in social behaviors. They had difficulty speaking, and they were easily frightened and extremely compulsive and need things to stay the same. You know, they're really, they need there's so much that's moving so fast for them that they really need to have some things that are the comfort of routine and familiarity. So when you're working with them, you have to honor that, and you have to go at a pace that doesn't heighten their anxiety. But one of the things, one of the sort of cables, if you will, that's missing in their brain is the cable that enables self-expression. So it's easier for them to give you a discourse on mathematics or physics or, et cetera, et cetera. But to ask them about, well, what's it like to be you? You'll get blank stares. And they don't even know, they have trouble expressing just simple things about themselves, let alone trying to explain to somebody that they already know doesn't experience the world the way they do, and trying to explain that world to them. I mean, it's for them, it's like, I think that it's like if you were to ask one of us to explain to somebody who's been blind from birth and never was able to see, how do you describe it to them?
Right.
How do you, what words do you use that could actually make the person grasp what it is? And so one of the things that I see myself as doing is, and together with, I mean, I want to collect a team of people who work on this. What I see myself as doing is really helping to translate, because I have an intuitive, I know so much about them that when I'm engaged in conversations with them, I have these intuitions that come up. And when I bring up those intuitions, I could see, they're like, oh my God, you nailed it. That's it. Thank you for giving me words to, because they can recognize something. It's easier to recognize something as a truth than it is to actually generate the truth sometimes, in terms of generating it in words. And so I'm kind of, I see myself as this intermediary that's trying to help them. I'm not wanting to speak for them. I'm wanting to just help them to, enable other people to understand what it's like to be them, what it is that are the gifts that they're bringing to the table, and then what are the challenges that they're up against, so that we can really come together as a community who is, we're all like in awe of them, okay, going, wow, okay. And then the question is, well, what next? And, and the whole spelling thing, I mean, I'm very, very supportive of that being acknowledged by, the ASHA as, a legitimate form of communication. But it's not enough. We can't stop there. I mean, in fact, I'm, that's one of the reasons why that's not been my major emphasis. I support it. I signed a letter, saying what my position is on it. But I need to, I'm forward thinking, and I'm really trying to address, the situation, as I see it currently.
Well, I want to explore that, but Suzanne and I just interviewed Dahlia, and she was talking about the incredible gifts that Lidu has to enter her dreamscape. She's dreaming, and Lidu's looking at, and she's in her dreams. This is a a whole other level beyond servant. This is like you're saying what the great gurus can do. So how do you talk about that? How do you explain or understand that? Because I think it's something they can teach us. They have such skills and capacities. We don't even know what consciousness is, and they are so advanced. So what do you say about that, Diane? Dan, did you want to say something about that too, Suzanne?
Yeah. You know, what is it that allows them to use their sixth sense in such a way that they are so telepathic and that they can, as Alan was just describing, you know, enter the dreamscape of others?
What we need to realize is that think of states of consciousness as having different frequencies associated with them. Okay, I mean, we know this, right? We've looked at EEGs for decades and have seen that there's a specific brainwave pattern associated with dreaming sleep versus, you know, the sort of the beta state, which is the kind of, you know, well, I'm engaged and I'm working and I'm, you know, task oriented and I'm doing da 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 da, versus relaxed alpha chill versus, the higher frequencies, the gamma frequencies that you see in these advanced meditators that really have high amplitude, very, very integrated, coherent brains. Okay. And you can see that by the nature of their brainwaves. So what they're doing is they know how to operate their system and tune it. You know, they know their dials there. Okay. If you think of it that way, think of it as that we live in a system where there's all of this, information that is you know, encoded in the waves. Okay. That we're just surrounded by. Okay. You know, that, you know, in physics, they talk about quantum wave fluctuations, you know, and so there's all this information that is encoded in that. And in order to basically decode the information, you need to dial into the frequency of it, okay? You dial into the frequency of it, and then you use the ability that you have for pattern recognition, which we use pattern recognition all the time. You're using pattern recognition right now just to understand what I'm saying. And so the same algorithms that enable pattern recognition, that enable me to, you know, recognize your face, you know, and to be able to recognize your voice and to, you know, and then to decode the information that's located there, they're just using the same algorithms. It's just that they know how to tune into the frequencies that are associated with dreams, or that are associated with higher states of consciousness. And so, yeah, that, I mean, that's in a nutshell.
Is that something eventually they could communicate? I know you talked about going beyond the spelling board, and what would that alternative be? Because Alex said in the last interview, he's would love to talk. It kills him that he can't speak, he says. And yet, you know, he can communicate so much more probably than putting it into words verbally. So what's the alternative there? How do we access?
Well, here's the way that I see it. I mean, you know, a lot of their knowledge is, as I just said, it's very, very similar to what you see with these advanced gurus. And similar to what you see with these advanced gurus, when they impart that knowledge to people that come to them and just say, boy, I want to be like you. I really want to evolve my consciousness. What they have to say in terms of their theory and their understanding of it, that information is already out there. Okay, it really is. I mean, there have been enough enlightened people that have existed on this planet, you know, for thousands of years that have put that information out there. And yes, you could get that information from them, but that's not really their major, That's not really the major reason why they're here. But how they will best impart that information is the same way that a lot of these mystics impart it. You know what that is? That's by being in their presence and receiving the transmissions, because your brain waves can start to entrain with them. And then you get the information you need without it having been exchanged through words. It forces you to engage in them in a way to get the information that doesn't require them to speak. And so what the biggest thing that we need to do is stop thinking, well, how, making such a premium of make them speak. It's sort of like, it's like when, let's just, let's pay attention to what we're being shown here
Right.
in so many different ways. And so, so the question is, how do we do this? And Lidu, bless her heart, has been so willing to be out there sharing herself with the world. I mean, it brings tears to my eyes because I know, these individuals. I mean, I know that it's, I mean, think about what it's like for them, with all that, how open they are to put themselves in those situations. And yet they're doing it. And every time they do, it is a tremendous gift to humanity.
Yes, totally agree. And thank you for discovering that for the world, because this is the leap in consciousness that we need, because we've sort of hit a brick wall, and AI really isn't going to do it. It may facilitate in some way these people, I don't know how, but they're so far beyond our ability to cognize that. Yes, I felt sitting in the presence of someone like Alex d'Erasmus was a was an upgrade, was a I mean, I felt like all these different radio frequencies were coming in, and it was exciting. And I feel for some of the moments where he doesn't have the capacity to handle it all, or he'll someone asked a question the other day, and he kind of freaked out because we heard later that that woman had a big argument with her daughter. And I think he was picking up on that energy, but and sort of transmuting, but he didn't know how to deal with what was coming at him. So he, spun out a bit. But, what would be the way? I mean, maybe just what you said, sitting on them there to integrate, their vast access to the quantum field for us regular sort of normal people. I mean, what do you
What
suspect?
would be the best way to, you're saying to,
Just sit with them or give them
well,
clues?
I think sitting with them, I think that, so much, here's the thing is that, the best teachers, don't just hand it to us. And they don't, because we when we earn it, when we actively engage in the process, we actually own it more.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely.
And and so what I'm wanting to do is I'm wanting to once I get, my book's going to be, published next year, and there are going to be, some documentaries coming out with me in them and whatnot. And what I'm wanting to do is to start having retreats in which we do this on a, first of all, on a smaller scale, where we really get a feel for what is the most beneficial, okay? And then we can talk about how do we scale it up. But first, I want to spend the time, doing it. And what I think is that We're going to experience them very differently if we're not putting expectations on them.
Right.
And we're one of the reasons why they like me is because I just hang out with them.
And you
I'll just hang
understand
out with
them,
them.
but you
I
understand.
understand them. I believe in them. I'll just hang out with them. And you know, and so oftentimes when people are supporting my work, they're thinking, you know, and I haven't had that many people support my work, but you know, the people who want to support my work now, it's like they want da 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 to happen, you know, and that's the wrong kind of energy to bring into the process.
Yes.
I was talking with a member of the board of my new institute the other day, and she was good friends with Jane Goodall. And she said to me, "You really are like Jane Goodall for these autistic individuals."
Yeah.
And that was something that Laura Lynn Jackman said to me, oh, you know, gosh, you know, over 15 years ago when I first met her, when on the scientific advisory board for the Forever Family Foundation. She said the spirits are telling me you're the Jane Goodall for these autistic kids. And she didn't even really know that much about me at all. This was Laura Lynn and I meeting for the first time. And when she said that to me, I thought, well, you know, that could be, you know, because I definitely like Jane Goodall. I have that approach where, you know, when I'm doing field research, I want to enter into their world by just observing and hanging out, you know, rather than imposing, saying, you know, you need to operate within the rules of my world. And, you know, rather than imposing that on them, I just kind of hang out. You know, see what happens, you know. And in that process, it's similar. That's when you start learning things. It's similar to think about when your mind is actively in that beta mode of, you know, trying to analyze things. Okay. Is that when the insights come? No. The insights come to you when you're in the shower or you're driving the car or you're washing the dishes or you're just getting out of bed. That's when the insights come to you because you haven't locked your brain into this state of consciousness that is trying to force things to go a certain direction. You're in a more receptive consciousness rather than an imposing consciousness. And this is the difference between the solar and the lunar energies. You know, the moon is, you know, is receptive. You know, all of the light that it has is shown upon it by the sun. And we are so solar oriented, so action oriented. So, you know, you can't ignore me, you know, you know, as we, you know, impose, you know, as we shed light on everything, you know, it's just like, yeah, you just march through, you know, it's a very powerful force. Whereas the moon is more, it's just there. And the light that shines on it, you know, is a different quality light. And th this is one of the reasons why the nighttime is so sacred. It's so sacred to Indigenous people because that's when you actually can start to be in more of that lunar energy and be in a more receptive mode.
Right. So do you think sitting with these autistic would be part of that? Because they seem so, my experience, so preoccupied with this other vast world that in a way they it feels like they don't even have time for us because they're so busy and occupied. But maybe intending a gathering would be different, do you think? You know what I mean about their what's there's so much going on for them and
Yeah, I think that I think that attending a gathering in which, as I said, where they can just sort of be, and letting them set the pace, but also having the kinds of things that we know help them to calm down. Think, whether we're talking about sound. Or some other kind of kind of soothing, with it, having the lights the way that they, it works for them. It's basically about, how do you need setting the tone in the atmosphere, in the amount of light and sound and the kinds of sounds and whatnot, setting the tone just right. So that it enables them to kind of settle in more. And I think that also can help the audience be more entrained with them as well. I mean, this is something that the ancients used to do. A lot of their these ancient structures that they built, they were built with properties of resonance. Yeah, there are reasons why a lot of these traditions have drumming and chanting and whatnot as part of what they're doing. Is it's not just something they're doing like we always, sing Christmas carols at Christmas time. It's far more of an instrument than that. It really is an instrument of entrainment.
Suzanne, go
Oh,
ahead.
this entrainment, Alan. I'm just bursting at the seams with her revelation about how frequencies entrain and how, in the presence of these gifted savants, that we are upgraded. And then how you confirmed that in the presence of Alex, you felt upgraded. And what implication does that have for humanity at this time? Have these autistic savants volunteered to come here at this time for humanity, for this upgrade to the new human and the new earth? And are they, in fact, activating our own sixth sense? And I can't help but think of Dahlia and Lidu. Look at Dahlia. She's got these tremendous advanced gifts of mind sight. Like, has she been in training with Lidu's ability, to be in that higher frequency of the sixth sense? And I just love how you refer to it, really, Diane, as being more evolved. So are they gifting us an evolutionary leap into higher frequency consciousness? And how beautiful is that?
No, this is really an exciting time to be alive. It really truly is. And the people who some of us are more sensitive than others. And so there's so many people that when they heard about my work, they were just they contacted me by email and said, I've known it all along, without even having had to have had one of these experiences. Just because of being around these kids energetically, they just and so what I'm saying is that they are coming in numbers now, such that it's not like there's just a handful of them. There may be only a dozen or so who are willing to put themselves out there in the public eye and be on be in documentaries and that sort of thing. But the reality is that there are children like this everywhere. And so they're bound to be in everybody's community.
Go
You've
ahead.
given me ideas for, Dahlia at our workshop. Dahlia and Lidu, will be doing this back to back, 90-minute, back to back for 180 minutes of being with Dahlia and Lidu, learning mind sight and telepathy. And I just, I really honor what you're saying, Diane, because I know that you're going to participate in that. And how can we ensure that the environment that we're creating being for that workshop is most conducive, you know, to that for Lidu, for Dahlia, for the participants. Because I just, what you're saying about, you know, having these retreats going forward and just starting, you know, with creating this, you know, relaxed environment where you're just being in the presence and not asking or expecting anything necessarily, you know, just I'm absorbing that for, you know, a co-creative collaboration, you know, maybe with you and Dahlia and Lidu in a sense and myself to create an environment at our retreat for those workshops that's really conducive to all that's for the great. Highest outcome of entrainment.
Yes, Suzanne, good idea. What do you think, Diane? How could we facilitate that?
Well, you know, I think that I would want to have, so if it's Dahlia and Lidu, I would want to have their input in on it, you know, rather than me be the one that tells you how to do that.
Right.
And it may be important for them to be able to go to the space where the retreat's going to be to help you know how to optimize it beforehand. So planning that into the schedule. But I think it really needs to come from them.
You're right. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. You know, one question I did have when we talked about the hardware and the brain before, is it a kind of old concept that talk about the left and right brain, because people have divided, you know, the fact that we are so left brain that we can't access these other quantum realms and they probably are more right brain? Or are you replacing it with these new ideas of the multiple capacities of brain activity? I just wanted to.
Well, there's really a lot to be said about the this whole left right hemisphere difference. I mean, we know from more recent work in neuroscience that it's not quite as black and white as that. I mean, that a lot of things that we, you know, cognitive tasks we do actually, you know, are engaging both hemispheres. And so yet at the same time, it is helpful to think of it in terms of there really being these two different operating modes that the brain has. You know, one of them is, you know, linear and analytical and detail oriented and to pick things apart. The other is holistic and you know, it gets the whole pattern, you know, gestalt kind of thinking. It's holistic, brings things together, connects the dot. Those are two very different styles of thinking. And we associate the analytical one with the left brain and the holistic one with the right brain. And so what happens is that with these different buttons that I mentioned, you know, sort of using an analogy of the nuclei and the brain stem as being like buttons, when you have different settings for that, okay, you're actually choosing kind of choosing what mode you're working out of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the best mode, okay, the one that I think gets you to the hill, if you will, is the one that is where you are using both, okay? You know, that isn't an either or. It is a more hybrid kind of thing. It is bringing together the solar and the lunar, and so I think that's really what's needed here. And
great,
that makes perfect sense, because we've been given a right and left brain. You
know,
yeah. It makes more sense that we would be fully utilizing both in a congruent way that complements one another.
Right. The Native Americans say you can't fly with one wing, you know, so it's like that. So at the upcoming amazing retreat that Suzanne's put together in Sedona, March 20th to 22nd, Diane will be there along with William Henry. And what is it that you really want to communicate? And of course, we have a couple of months at that event that will really be exciting for people to hear. I mean, just what you said today is amazing, but what is the additional work you're going to be adding to that sort of presentation.
Gee, I mean, I've given you a lot already
you have,
today.
but I, what are you going to focus on in March? What would you like?
Don't give it away.
It's everything you're doing, it's a gestalt of all the new information and old, and then what you're integrating and bring. I guess I'm asking, what's the next level for you? Your book is coming out. That's going to explain a lot, but, and you want to create these retreats and workshops, but where do you think your work is going? I mean, you're a revolutionary. You brought this awareness to the world and it's invaluable. And now, you know, as a kind of leading edge scientist, where you think you're headed in that, in what direction?
I think my theory is really, really, I mean, I've been working on it for, gosh, I mean, depending upon how you think about it, I mean, I've been working on it for 50 years, if you think about it, you know, that I first started working on it when I became a neuroscience major, right? You know, so I've been really trying to understand these deeper questions for a long, long, long time. And I think that when my book comes out, that's going to keep me busy for a little while, because there are going to be a lot of people that read my book. My intention with my book is not to have it just reviewed by parapsychologists. I mean, I'll have some parapsychologists review it, but no, that's not my intention is to have it reviewed also by people who are physicists, neuroscientists, mathematicians, et cetera. Because what I really, my goal is really to change the paradigm within the system. And because my book is linking together real experiential, so real experiences with empirical data, with known facts within science, and known information from ancient wisdom traditions. And I'm using my analytical mind, which I was a polymath. I understand a lot of different branches of science, with my intuition. And I'm really integrating all of that together. And what I want to see happen is for people to learn about my theory, and then for us to come up with experiments that could test the theory. That's how you advance science. And once we advance science to really adopt a new paradigm, a new paradigm that we've been dancing around for decades. Mm-hmm. It's now time to crystallize it and replace a paradigm that we know is wrong. I mean, so, you know, when it was in my first book, I give you all the reasons why the paradigm is wrong. And in this book, I tell you what I think might be right.
What is that theory? And,
well, I've told you little bits of it so
I know,
far. But
I know
no, I'm
you
not
have.
Gonna. I, you
okay,
know what?
We'll wait
two,
till the
two
book is
minutes
published.
And,
that's okay.
Yeah, wait till the people need to read the book, because there's a, it's like a mathematical proof. Okay,
right.
it's where you need to have people have a foundation. Okay, yeah, right. And you know, so that you understand, you know, some of these things, and you go, oh wow, yeah, and you have to have those pieces together for otherwise it just sounds like,
right,
you know, it frankly, you know, a lot of it could sound like, you know, new age stuff, okay, you know, but the reason why it sounds like new age stuff is that I think that part of what brought the new age movement together was all these people doing psychedelics and actually getting downloaded with truth that was truth for the new age, but nobody's going to listen to them because they were a bunch of hippies doing LSD.
Right.
And, you know, but now people are starting to realize that, just like the, you know, the shamans and, you know, the Amazon, that are, you know, where you people are doing ayahuasca and they're getting information. They're going, wow, you know, that actually gave me insight into my scientific theory. it's starting to give a different credibility, because it's not that it's the drug speaking. It's that the drug opens up, it forces the channel. It forces the channel so that you get a taste of what it's like for these individuals who are already born with the chemistry. That means that channel is always accessible to them.
Do you think it may help? I mean, not to sort of change the subject, but with the non-human intelligence that seems to be coming here, because when Alex says he's flying, he's from the Pleiades and he's flying these ships, it's like, what? And it's like, so there's something else coming into our field that's also transcends the human dimension. I think they may be helping us prepare the way to meet the others. That's just my little way out theory, possibly. What do you think?
Yeah, could be. I mean, I won't disagree with that. I mean, I mean, I think that there's a bigger, more general reason why they're here. That is really, that's not the main deal.
Right, of course, they're here to, I think, upgrade all of us because we're so primitive in our mode of thinking. I mean, that's what I would say. We're still arguing and fighting and creating wars and, very left brain or whatever you want to call it, obsessions, and we haven't expanded into our full potential. I mean, anything you want to say about that, Suzanne? I mean, as far as what?
I think that everybody's at a different level of evolutionary, development. And I don't know that per se, there might be a percentage of the population that are still learning lessons within the 3D realm of duality. And maybe 4D and 5D isn't for everybody at this time. Maybe that's not where they're at on their evolutionary journey. But some of us who may be called the ripened seeds or, interested or pursuing the awakening path, we're ready to resonate at the higher frequency. Maybe we've learned the lessons we were meant to learn in 3D. So, I don't know to say that everyone is meant to be upgraded at this time because we wouldn't want to deprive them of the lessons that they need to learn in the third dimension, possibly. But support from the cosmic brothers and sisters who, want to give us a hand up in our evolutionary progression. I think that there is an evolutionary impulse, and possibly, just in the same way that we might feel it could be our mission to support the evolutionary advancement of humanity, this is possibly their mission as well as being more advanced. They're giving us a hand up, those of us who are ready, open, and willing, and wanting that upgrade at this time.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that we're really meant to all just evolve at the same time, to the same place. I mean, I just don't think that's how it works.
Right.
So just like we don't, we're just look at it in terms of just the human lifespan. We have little toddlers here, we have teenagers, we have centenarians, right? We have all these people that are different stages in their life. Okay. Well, similarly, I believe that souls are at different stages in their own evolution, and that you just can't you can't rush it. There are certain things that somebody who is in their 80s will understand that. A teenager, there's no way in hell that a teenager's going to understand it. And so you can't just think, oh, because they've got a good vocabulary now they're going to understand all of this stuff. No, there's like built-in restraints for individuals. And whatever your philosophical take on why that is, if it's that, yeah, that, that the soul still has lessons to learn, and I'm a believer in that particular philosophy as well. But you don't even have to adopt that philosophy. Just realize that people are at different levels, and some of us were able to not succumb to the conditioning, the social conditioning or the programming, and so we're kind of in the leading edge of this. And then there are other people that, boy, they're not going to adopt something until everybody else has adopted it. They're just going to be people like that. And you've got everything in between. And so what I'm focused on and what I see my job as is those that just need a little push. Okay. What they're waiting for is the evidence that they have never seen, or they're waiting for the theory that puts it into something that makes logical sense, or whatever. I'm lowering those thresholds, okay? And then we'll see how much of humanity comes on board.
So what's the best way for us and everyone watching to support your work and your ongoing investigations and research? I mean, I want to do what I can to, and I'm sure people, you've inspired so many people. What
Well, I have this new nonprofit institute now, Hennessy Institute, tax deductible. We are actively fundraising right now because there's operating expenses. There's things that you need to just put a machine together, okay? Because I'm really wanting to do what I said earlier, and that is to really go about this in a way in which we can really, really understand these individuals who've gifted us with their presence here, how we can help them, and to really create a to create a movement that goes way beyond just the research itself.
Yeah. One more thing I wanted to ask you was in our last interview, you talked about how children learn language, and there might be a telepathic component to the parent actually communicating the essence of a word as opposed to just rote learning. Can you go into that theory a little more? Because I think that's something, there's truth to that. It seems like there's definitely a truth to that.
I think that when we are first, when we first come into the world, that we are still in a state of shared consciousness, that we really haven't developed the sense of self yet. We certainly haven't developed the sense of self in this body. And so what happens is that as we acquire language and acquire the ability to move this body and agency that way, we start identifying more with that. But that, and we start becoming more and more disconnected from this sort of unity consciousness that we all come from. That's really our source before we sort of descend into the embodied perspective that then it's like identifying with the avatar in a video game. It's like we take on this as our sense of self without recognizing we have a higher self. And so it's really about getting in touch with your own higher self that's required. And so when children are, first acquiring language, though, they're still connected, and so they're able to know what you're thinking when the sound is coming out of your mouth. And it's really uncanny how quickly small children pick up language. I mean, we went for most of humanity's existence on Earth, children were not being, given, readers, to teach them language, right? They were just hanging out with people who spoke and somehow figuring out what it was they were talking about. And the reason why that was possible was because there was this shared consciousness, and that and then the more and more we identify with the self, you're not plugged into that sense of shared consciousness as much, and so then you're more engaged in your own private thoughts that are oftentimes language based, that you get caught up in these sort of echo chambers of and tapes of repeated sort of things that you tell yourself or that other people have said to you, but you're not really, you're in your own little world. It brings up one of the ironies of this whole thing is that autism, I mean, the name itself comes from autos, which means self. And, the idea was that they were all, in their own little world. And the reality is that we're more in our own little real world. And they're less identified with self. So it's like we got it like totally backwards.
This has been your path in a sense for 40 or plus years, but like anyone, a kind of spiritual aware person, it's also about your own self-development. So how have you evolved, in your own person being around and doing this research? What has shifted for you and what realizations, if you want to share, has come to you on a personal level because of this work?
What I would say is that, wow, it's just been quite a journey. I mean, it's one thing to know things theoretically, and then it's another to live them. And I think that it's created for me more of a lived experience.
In what way? Like,
Nobody's ever asked me that question before. Of course, I mean, a lot of the questions you've asked me, nobody's asked me before. So it's not like I have canned answers to
that's
everything.
why I'm
Um,
asking these
but,
questions.
but, um,
Because you're such
but
an
it,
incredible resource. Oh, okay, go ahead. Yes.
but yeah, I mean, in terms of my own evolution, I really think that I have just a different view of our potential as human beings. I mean, when and maybe, then my own potential. Because to some extent we all buy into the limitations that we're taught. And so I think, I mean, yeah, I think to some extent that's the truth for me as well. Because I mean, even though I knew I was, really good at school and blah, 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 got better grades, than other people and whatnot. I mean, I never in my wildest dreams thought I'd be like in this position I'm in now, I mean, never in my wildest dreams.
Put a lot of work
And
in, so yeah.
so for me, what it's meant is that, what was a hobby for me, really, I mean, a hobby and a passion, but a hobby nonetheless, I'm like, oh, wow, the world is actually taking me seriously now all of a sudden.
Great. Yeah.
And I think, the popularity of the telepathy tapes, even though, a lot of people attacked it as, oh, that's pseudoscience and blah, 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 blah. I
Right.
mean, what it did was is it really raised a lot of people's awareness of my work, and enabled a lot of people who were sitting on the sidelines, have really strongly believing that this stuff was possible or even happening. But it was like nobody was ever saying anything about it, and so then, coming out in such a public way, and having the kind of credentials that I do, I mean, it took, it took the world by the storm. Yet at the same time, you have to realize I've been doing this for a long time. And so I was like,
Right.
I went from feeling like, yeah, I had, people had been following my work for, well over a decade, maybe 2 decades and whatnot. But I mean, it really took me from that to all of a sudden, it's just like now, people want the selfies with me everywhere I go, that
One of my favorite
I'm,
lines of
but
yours
it,
is that it
yeah,
took you
I,
40
not the
years.
grocery store locally, but I mean, when I go to these conferences, yeah.
Well, like it took you 40 years, you said, to be an overnight sensation, which is a
Right,
great line because it was a
right.
lot of hard work and risk and, people threatening your license and awful things to stand up for what you believed in. So we thank you for that. And actually the world is thanking you for this. So yeah, I'm glad you stayed with it. Suzanne, do you want to add anything there?
Just, a great deal of admiration and respect, Diane, for all that you've done and all that you're continuing. to do, just opening humanity's eyes to the gift that these savants truly are. And, you know, just how much you're letting humanity know about their own potential, because I think that's really one of Dalia and Lidu's messages, is that this is possible for you. You innately have these gifts and abilities, and we're going to show you how to tap into them, how to activate them. And, you know, just the way, too, that you are bringing your credentials to this, Diane, is allowing more of a mainstream audience to, you know, believe in these possibilities. Just the way that you're painting this beautiful mosaic of spirituality, science, philosophy, you know, all of it, because it's really not fragmented. It's the whole big picture of how it's all intricately interconnected. So just, you know, a great deal of admiration and respect. I'm so delighted you'll be joining us for our Sedona Ascension Retreat, Diane, and just thank you and bless you.
Yes.
Well, thank you,
Diane. Thanks again. We really look forward to seeing you there in Sedona, and you know, having people understand the importance of this work, is that we're transcending the old forms of consciousness, or what we've never even defined consciousness. It hasn't, but you're giving us another element that will expand upon a kind of a primitive awareness we already have. So the autistic kids in your work are, I think, upgrading the human operating system to include a larger reality, what I call new reality. So, well, thank you for your time and your
Well, thank you. Thank you.
We'll see you at the Conscious Life Expo in LA, I think, before that.
You will. You will.
Mm-hmm. Are you coming to New York at all to visit Alex or anything?
I would love to, but I'll tell you, my life is pretty busy right now. I mean, I have a lot going on, but I want to. I totally want to. And one of these days, I will be in New York for sure. I mean, I have lots of reasons to come to New York. Well,
Diane Hennessy in Sedona for the Sedona Ascension Retreat, March 20th to the 22nd. 2026, produced by Suzanne Ross there. And I think it's really going to be a lot of fun, you know, just the people we have gathered, and the exchange of information happens within a community that's at the leading edge. New ideas seem to kind of come online. So that's why I'm excited. Thanks again, Diane. Okay.
Thank you.
Blessings.
See you in Sedona.
You're invited to join us for our 2026 Sedona Ascension Retreat. It's our 11th anniversary, and we're so excited to celebrate it with you. We'll be opening cosmic portals with our friend Daryl Anka, who'll be channeling Bashar, along with UAP disclosure researcher Danny Sheehan. We'll be opening Ascension portals with Ascension expert William Henry, Ascension alchemist Sarah L. Caldy, and Ascension astrologer Molly McCord. Fire is the key element of the Golden Age, and we invite you to set your heart on fire and ignite the passion in your soul. You can become superhuman, and filmmaker Caroline Corey will show you how. You can become telepathic, and MindSight expert Dalia Burgoyne will be teaching techniques. Psychic and medium Jill Jackson will be sharing her gifts and abilities with you. Renowned hypnotist Sarah Bressman Cosme will be guiding a group past life regression. Special guests include Rizwan Burke, who will be giving compelling evidence that we're living in a simulated multiverse, and Dr. Diane Hennessy, star of the Telepathy Tapes podcast and author of the ESP Enigma, as well as Hakeem Isler, creator of PsyGames International. You'll be immersed in sound journeys offered by Metapop musician Omashar and harp and crystal bowl performer Shelley Reed. Channelers Pia and Colin will be transmitting messages from different star races. Host of one of the most popular podcasts on YouTube, Yannicka will be hosting a live Wisdom from North show. A highlight of our event will be the Sedona Sky Watches. I am your host, Suzanne Ross, and my co-host will be Alan Steinfeld and meditation guide Tangela. We invite you to join us for our 2026 Sedona Ascension Retreat. We will be opening portals through unconditional love. See you in Sedona.